listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 179 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me is Chris Robley. Chris, how you doing?
I'm good, and I think that our Portlands have switched in some sort of time vortex, a space-time vortex, because you've been buried under snow for like a week, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been crazy. It's not normally the place where you get snowstorms in Portland, Oregon.
No, normally that's this side of the country, yeah. This Portland, but we have had 40 to 50 degree weather for the past few days, and our snow is melting.
That's usually what it's like here, but yes, it's today I think it's a balmy like 23 degrees, and We got almost a foot of snow, and it's not melting anytime soon, so people are freaking out, going crazy. We've had to close the office at CD Baby a few days just because people couldn't get there. It's been nuts.
And well, for people that are listening in Minnesota or Alaska or Maine, Portland, Oregon, because they never get this kind of weather, is not equipped to deal with it. They don't have plows, they don't have sand trucks, they don't have salt trucks. So they're helpless.
Yeah, so
feel their
people,
pain.
Yes, people, and we get wisecracks from people in Wisconsin saying, "Oh, just deal with it." It's like, well, you have snow plows, you have cars that are prepared. We don't buy those things because we don't typically need them. So yes, the city goes crazy, it shuts down, which is kind of nice actually, when you have to just stop, get outside of your busy routine and just hang out with your neighbors sledding. So I've enjoyed it. Chris, I just got off the phone with some folks confirming that Small Town Poets, we will be recording at Ardent Studios for our next record in March. So I'm very excited about that.
Nice. That's in Memphis, right?
Yes, it is. So I'm very much looking forward to that. We have a bunch of songs we've been working on and sort of partnering with our old label, not a label deal, but just partnering with them because they want to see things continue, and so we're just taking it slow and just gonna go there and record and see what happens. And I'm very excited about it. Very excited to go back to that studio. We're gonna be in the same studio that we recorded our first two albums in, so that'll be fun.
Do they have any of the gear from like Stax?
Yes, they do. They still have a lot of that gear. Yeah,
that's awesome.
When they started that studio, they basically the founder of Ardent, he had worked for Stax and moved, you know, the Stax was closed and he bought all that gear. And so a lot of it's still there. Yeah, there's some amazing vintage gear that is there that you wouldn't want to take on the road with you because it'd just fall apart, but it's amazing to have in a studio and get those tones out of it. So looking forward to that.
I expect the magic of all that history to be very present in your music.
I hope so too. I expect it as well. So we've got a good discussion today. We're going to talk about a little bit of a marketing success that I stumbled onto during the holiday season for our music. We're going to talk about that, kind of recount what happened, and there's some tips and interesting insights with that. We have a couple of listener questions. We got a call and we've got an email. But first, let's get to the news.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
Music.
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 News.
Well, Facebook is bulking up its internal sound design team and recruiting an experienced composer to help spearhead the creation of its own music. The in-house music composer role requires 10-plus years of professional experience in the music industry, plus experience in Pro Tools and the ability to work closely with a wide variety of sound artists. The position also requires someone who can compose innovative music in multiple styles and drive music-related projects from inception to completion with little oversight. In addition, it calls for someone who possesses exceptional composition skills and mastery of modern production techniques. Facebook already deploys original library music as the sonic backdrop to projects such as its Year in Review videos, which present an automated retelling of someone's last 12 months on the platform. This could be the beginning of Facebook trying to create a music catalog of their own that would allow users uploading videos to the site to select royalty-free music to play in the background of their videos, or it could be their desire to just have more canned music to irritate us when we log on to Facebook. Either way, it's clear Facebook is trying to make gains in the music experience on their site. 5 years ago, the demise of the music industry seemed almost inevitable. Recession, rampant piracy, falling CD sales, and a fear that kids just don't buy music anymore had giant record labels, once oozing wealth, counting the pennies. Yet 2016 has seen a reversal of fortune, and the industry's savior is not what many predicted. Profits from music streaming, first championed by Spotify and now offered by Apple and Amazon, have given some labels their largest surge in revenue in more than a decade. At the beginning of December, one of the world's biggest labels, Warner Music, announced revenues of $3.25 billion for this past year, its highest in 8 years. More significantly, $1 billion of that was from streaming, more than double its download revenue and over $100 million more than its physical revenue. The surge in profits is being seen across all the major labels. In the first half of 2016, streaming revenue in the U.S. grew by 57% to $1.6 billion, and worldwide digital revenues overtook those from physical sales for the first time in music industry history, mainly because of streaming. This year's most streamed artist was Drake, with 4.2 billion streams. Well, U2 has decided that a Donald Trump victory means they can no longer release music. According to The Edge, we just went, hold on a second. We've got to give ourselves a moment to think about this record and about how it relates to what's going on in the world, U2 guitarist The Edge told Rolling Stone. He said Trump's election was like a pendulum has suddenly just taken a huge swing in the other direction. Suddenly the world changed. U2 had written most of the songs for Songs of Experience, the follow-up to their 2014 platinum Songs of Innocence, but The Edge said it needs to be revised because the world is a different place. They're putting the album on ice for a minute just to really think about it one more time before putting it out, just to make sure that it really was what we wanted to say. This came right on the heels of their announcement that the 30th anniversary of the Joshua Tree album, they will be doing a special Joshua Tree tour where they play the album in its entirety. So, Chris.
Kevin.
You know that I'm a big U2 fan. I found this announcement to be very, very, very disappointing.
It sounds, I mean, artistically speaking, it sounds ridiculous to me. Not that,
exactly.
So I should clarify, though, because I actually felt a similar basic impulse. Like, I've written a bunch of songs lately, and I've been thinking about, you know, I'm kind of at the beginning stages of thinking, where do I want to record? What do I want it to sound like? Who am I going to hire to, you know, make this record with me? Which songs do I pick? And up until a few months ago, I had a very different set of songs in mind for what I felt needed to be shared. And after the election, I did change my mind about, but this is before I'd done any work. The fact that they had it pretty much recorded and ready to go, I'm like, just put it out. Like, that's your statement. And then if you need to go back and write new music that addresses this new world, like, that's totally fine. Like, so in a way I get it, but I also think, like, don't just go back and rewrite the lyrics. Like, just put out what you had to say then. And
yeah, I mean, in your case, I understand, like, if you're, like, planning, you gotta... But to me, this sounded like a total cop-out. This just sounded ridiculous to me because... Any band that takes 5-6 years to make a record, the world is always going to be a different place. You can't take that long to release music. To me, it felt like they're living in a world of this gigantic circus that they unleash every time they have an album come out. And they had plans that probably the way they were going to tour was going to look ridiculous, maybe, in their mind. But the songs themselves, it just tells the fans, you know what, we're never going to release music. That, to me, that's what it feels like, because they've been saying this over and over again for the last several releases. They keep saying, oh, we've got like 3 albums worth of music and we're going to release the second half of this later this year. With the last 3 releases, they've done this and they never do. And then it takes them so long that it just felt like, as a fan, it's like you just told me you're no longer relevant. That's what it felt like. Not because an artist can't take a moment and go, hey, the tone that in the world is a little different than we expected. It's just like, just put it out. Write new music.
Yeah, I mean, a song that the tone of a song that felt true a year ago or two, like, you know, if it felt true, it should still be true, unless you put in some sort of weird future facts that have now been undone. But U2 doesn't do that. They're not like a sci-fi band. Like, no. So, yeah, it's just bizarre.
To me, if I could say one thing that sums up how I feel these days, and it really taking off the keynote that Jack Conte had at our conference, to me, if you hear one thing, it's relevance equals releasing music. If you can't release music, you're no longer relevant. If the music you make is so tied into, if they just can't release it and move on, it's like, why can't they just put it out there? If they're going to shelve it and then probably not even release it, why not just put it out there anyway? They'll make a couple bucks.
Right.
It just feels like...
Why don't they team up with Apple to dump it into everyone's iTunes for free? And
yeah, so it just is weird. It frustrated me because I think the path to success in a streaming world that, you know, there's lots of good news about streaming now is releasing music. You got to get it out there. You got to build a catalog. You got to tell your fans that there's new music coming out. And like for what you were saying, that it would be an artistic statement, sort of what kind of artistic statement do you want to make? And so you're looking at what songs you're going to record. To me, with U2, it was the exact opposite thought. It's like, what kind of product statement do we want to make? And we're trying to make this big giant product that, you know, makes another $200 million for the next year. And maybe that product's not going to land and generate that kind of revenue. And that to me is what it felt like. And it was probably the first time in history that Bob Lefset wrote a post that I actually agreed with.
Well,
so,
it's like,
anyway,
it's like suddenly their creative decisions are, well, not even suddenly, I'm sure for the past 30 years, but it's not just the four of them, you know, there's their manager team and probably 100 roadies. And I don't even know, like the size of their operation is,
it's big enormous. Business,
right?
Yeah, it's big business. Part of me also thought that, you know, they've got this Joshua Tree tour that they're doing and that they were probably feeling nostalgic, feeling the, you know, reliving the fire they felt when they released that album. And they were very much more of a band that I don't know that I'd call it politically driven, but definitely idea driven. They weren't just, you know, pop love songs. And they had a lot of feeling and meaning, and maybe that they were thinking that this latest album with the state of the world, thinking a lot about that they just maybe put out pop candy and it didn't feel right. I don't know. I thought it was just frustrating that you've got an album done and in this economy of music, just put it out. It'll get a bazillion streams and they'll get a ton of downloads and just move on. You don't have to make a giant, you know, a giant to do about everything. But anyway.
Well, you know, I know that you're a big fan of the album format. I am too. And I think you've said in the past that when U2 has released singles, you aren't interested because it doesn't feel tied in with some larger creative statement. But I would say that is one band that might actually benefit from working on a single song at a time and putting it out, like, because they can't ever seem to get anything done. They get bogged down, they rethink yeah, everything, true. And suddenly it's 6 years later and you're like, oh, they're still a band? Like, they should just, you know, hole up in Berlin, make one song, put it out. Go to Dublin, make a song, put it out. Like, whatever their process is, but, like, just...
It, for them, I'd probably agree, because knowing their process, they do a lot of just piecing stuff together, and it's not like they go and record everything down in the course of a couple weeks. They do a lot of just cutting and pasting, and yeah, you know what would be an amazing, a single release strategy, since you mentioned it, and I was thinking about this earlier today, that I could get on board with is one where it's like, it's more tighter together. Like, even if it's the same album, it's off the album, but it's like one song a week or one, you know, two a week, like one at the beginning of the week, one at the end of the week. So it's kind of more of this event. So it's not like, hey, we're just going to trickle out a song every month, but it's tighter together. So it's more of an event that feels like I'm getting the pieces to the puzzle and there's this buildup to having the whole puzzle. To me, that feels like a strategy that would work and, you know, something maybe... You two should try. So I'm available if they want some consulting services. But anyway, to me, it was kind of like the last gasp of the old mega, you know, pop icon mentality that if you can't release music in this day and age, you can't be relevant. And that's, you know, with artists, you never know what's going to connect with fans. That's the other thing that I think is important and sort of what we're going to be talking about in a little bit later, that you have your vision of what maybe you want to say, but then the song that connects with people may be totally different than what you expect. And if you just hold on to it all just because of, you know, insecurities or whatever, then you're only hurting yourself. Just put it out there. If no one listens to it, then that's the same result than you had it on the shelf. But it's only upside if you get it out there. So that's my rant about that. I was very disappointed. It felt like, as a fan, knowing how long it takes them to release music, that it was just like, we're done. That's what it felt like.
Yeah. Well, they're not done. I mean, I see them on Instagram every 5 minutes talking about how they want to play at my house.
That's true. Well, that was the thing on Instagram. They had this big announcement. Like, I think it was New Year's Day. They're like, so much amazing new stuff coming from you two this year. And they announced the Joshua Tree tour, and then they announced they're shelving their album. So that was funny. All right. Well, like the news said, lots of interesting things happening with streaming. Both you and I have been kind of on a bit of a journey with playlisting and streaming, and have been trying different things and investigating different ways that artists are seeing success from it. It's been kind of fun the last month or so to really be diving into it. I was supposed to be recording a podcast today with someone to be our part one of our streaming / Spotify playlisting episodes, but due to illness, that will not be happening this week. It'll be happening later this month, but I'm really excited about that. Just lots of cool things happening, I think, with how these platforms and so forth are connecting people to music in different ways than expected, and that's why I think, you know, in the news, they was talking about the streaming being the unexpected savior of the industry, but everyone was thinking that people would interact with these services the way they interact with downloads or the way they interact with CDs, and that has not been the case. And the way the industry has gone has allowed for more consumption, more sharing, more ways for tracks to bubble to the surface.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a small anecdote, but a couple weeks ago, I subscribed to follow a small singer-songwriter playlist on Spotify that's run by Songpicker. And I don't even know, it probably had like 100-something songs in it. So it took me a while to like listen through, you know, over a few days. Anyways, I found this song by a band called I Said Yes that I thought was amazing, and I'd never heard of the band. And like, I immediately assumed that they must be like huge in England, and anyways, after more investigating, you know, it's not like they're complete unknowns, but I just thought, how cool. Like, I just fell in love with this band that, you know, is you know, at a level that's like, you know, not... I was surprised is what I'm saying. And, like, I think it's so cool that these sort of unknown bands have a chance to reach people through these playlists.
Agreed. And it also is really interesting to see that there was this artist at CD Baby that I was looking at their stuff. They have over 50 million streams on Spotify. And, you know, we were helping them. They're one of our CD Baby Pro clients. And so they're making also a lot of money off of music publishing as well. And as I was diving into it, I think the biggest thing that struck me was not all the plays, but the song that's obviously getting all this energy on Spotify. It's from 2007. And so it's like these platforms have created this, I don't know, level playing field's not what I'm looking for. It's like this idea that music is timeless and it doesn't matter when it was made, who made it. It's just, if it's good music, it's good music and it can find a place. So that's
yeah,
what
it fits the context in which it's being shared, you know, for whatever playlist. But isn't that the same artist who also... The same song had almost no activity on Apple Music?
Yeah, correct. It was
so
very
like
weird.
Totally, not just the context of the playlist, but the context of that playlist within a particular platform was its venue for success.
Yes, it's very interesting. And that's a good lead-in to what we're going to talk about today. We'll get back to playlisting in a lot of detail in an upcoming episode. Like I said, both Chris and I have been doing a lot of experimenting. We've been doing some experimenting at CD Baby as well. And I think that's going to be a really good two-parter episode. But for today, Chris, I mentioned at the top of the show, we saw this little success that came out of nowhere over the holiday season. It wasn't insane success where I'm quitting my day job. But like you mentioned that certain songs performing on platforms, we noticed that this one song of ours off of one of our Christmas albums in 2015 got about 350,000 streams on Pandora between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And I thought, huh, that's very interesting. And this year, the same thing was happening again. That same song, it's not one of our hits. It's not a song that if we go play a show, even a Christmas show, that someone would probably request. We do it live. It's an a cappella song. It's an old traditional song, our version of it. So it was just this song that's just out there. People like it when we do the a cappella thing live, but it's not like they come to the shows clamoring for that one. But notice this giant success on Pandora. So I'm working on a blog article for our DIY Musician blog, and I'll probably title it something like How I Used Pandora Amp and CD Baby Trending to Score 55,000 Views of Our Video, because that's what happened. And I thought it'd be fun to kind of walk through what happened today, because it was one of those things that wasn't like this strategy. It wasn't something I planned out. It was a matter of we just saw some data that was available and reacted to it, and it drove a bit of success. So what we're talking about.
I have a fundamental question here. Were you looking at? I mean, I know the answer I'm asking for everyone listening. What were you looking at to find this data? And how do you get hooked up with all that? And
that's a good question, Chris, because I was using Pandora Amp. Amp stands for Artist Marketing Platform. And if you haven't signed up for that account, you should immediately. You can only get it if you've got music on Pandora. So if you've got music on Pandora, you should be signed up with that. I was also looking at CD Baby Trending Reports. We have these amazing new trending reports. I am so hooked on them because you can log in and see what playlists are featuring your music. And I will save all the details for our playlisting episode, but found some hidden success for our music there as well that I never would have known existed without logging in to our trending reports. But so those are some of the two main data places I'm looking at. You should take advantage of those and be looking at them.
Do you have a ritual for looking at? Is it a daily thing or a weekly thing, or how often are you logging into?
With Pandora, I'll probably look at it on a monthly basis. We get a huge pop at Christmas with our Christmas albums. With our non-Christmas music, we get a continual flow. Nothing as big as what we get at Christmas. But with CD Baby, I'll look, you know, during the holiday season, you know, because most of the music we have with CD Baby is our holiday records as well. So I'll be looking there every day. I mean, my first week off for holiday break, I spent most of my time looking at trending reports and Pandora and engineering
vacation.
This little thing we're going to talk about. It was fun. I thought it was great. I was having a good time because the thing that I love about when you check data as an artist, it's not just that you're looking for information to verify which your own assumptions, like, hey, this is our big song. Yep, it's doing well. I mean, you want to be able to log in and see that those things are happening. But really what I find interesting is to look and find success that's happening that you had no idea was happening in the first place. And that's what was happening on Pandora. That song was getting so many spins. And we're now in this ecosystem where what happens on Pandora can be huge, but not spill over onto Apple Music or Spotify. Just like we were talking about that artist that had 50 million streams on Spotify, but had, by comparison, very little on Apple Music. It's like a platform can drive a lot of success just within its own ecosystem and its own users. So I saw that and I thought, huh, that's interesting. You know, we do that song live when we perform at Christmas, and we had just performed the week before, and I happen to have a very nice HD video of that song, and it sounded really nice, a cappella. everyone stayed on key.
Yeah, you got no, it sounded good.
No bad notes. No auto tune. And so I thought, I was just sitting there, I should probably put this on Facebook and see if anyone shares it, if anyone cares. And I did. And what was amazing is instantly it was getting shared a lot. And our Facebook network is only like 5,000 folks. And a lot of those people have, you know, come throughout the last 4 or 5 years. We don't have this active Facebook presence throughout the year. So really, it's probably just a small handful of people that see our posts on a regular basis when we do.
I have another question to maybe back up a minute. Yeah. Why did you decide to put it on Facebook as opposed to YouTube? Why not do both, I guess?
I had seen artists talk about the fact that if you want something to get shared a lot, put it on Facebook. If you want something, if you're looking more towards building a channel, monetization, and all that, then YouTube's where you should go. So I will probably put this on YouTube eventually. I just thought I didn't want to split the audience and have some people go looking for it at YouTube. I wanted it to be on Facebook and to keep sharing it. And I'd never really, we'd posted some videos directly to Facebook before, but nothing that I thought might have the potential to get shared a lot. So this was one of those things where I thought, it's obviously got an audience on Pandora. If I post it directly to Facebook, this is something that probably has more value to us if it gets shared a lot. So that was the thinking behind that, and wanting to see if the success it was seen on Pandora could be sort of mirrored on Facebook.
So I think it was maybe the night that you posted it. I'm not sure what time you posted it, maybe in the afternoon or something. But by that night, I saw it and I liked it, you know, on Facebook. And then within an hour or two, my mother-in-law shared it. She has no idea who you are. She doesn't know your band, but she was like, oh, Chris liked this. Let me listen. And she loved it. And so she shared it to all her friends. I was like, this is definitely like catching on.
Yeah. So that was what was interesting and why I thought it'd be fun to talk about, because I posted this video and, you know, on a typical video or post we make, we might get 10 shares total. We might get, you know, we might get 40, 50 likes. Like I said, there's no momentum on our Facebook channel. So it was clear from when I posted it, within like a minute, there was like 12 shares. And then by the time I drove home, because I posted it like right before I left work, by the time I got home, there was like 30 or 40 shares. And, you know, on Facebook, especially the if you're looking at the mobile app, it'll tell you the organic reach. And so I was looking at the organic reach, and like I said, our followers, we had like 5,200 followers when we started. And then after we posted it, we had like 5,200 followers when we started, and the organic reach was already way beyond that at that point. You know, it was like, okay, this has clearly gone beyond our network. Something's happening. Let's see what we can do to throw a little fuel on the fire and see if we can get this thing shared a lot. So from that point, I said, yeah, this thing's got some legs. We decided to, you know, hey, get all your friends and family, everyone in your personal network, as many people as you can, see if they'll share it. And so we did that, and that pushed us up to like 100 shares within a couple hours. And I think we had like 10,000 views at that point.
How many likes did you have? So if you had 10,000 views and 100 shares, how many likes were there?
I don't remember.
Comments or anything.
I'd have to look, because the comments started rolling in like crazy too. There was a lot of comments. And so by that evening, one of the guys in the band said, hey, we should probably put a link to where they can buy the music on the post. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Kevin Bruner, vice president of marketing.
I'm like, how on earth did I screw that one up? And so I added some links, and this is where the CD Baby trending reports come in. And you can see, so the next day, you can log into the trending reports, and you can see we saw an immediate bump on Apple Music and an immediate bump on downloads. That song ended up getting probably about 150 downloads over the course of like the 3-4 days that this video was getting shared a lot. We got like 20 album downloads. So yeah, we ended up with a total of like 805 shares, 500 new followers. And it was just interesting because, you know, it was like we were kept trying to find that way. When you start seeing something that, okay, this has got some legs, it's going beyond our network, it's having some viral activity, as they call it. But how do we actually get the dam to break? Like, how do we actually get this to go from, you know, where we ended up at about 55,000 views? How do we get it to go from that to like 500,000 views? How do we get it to go beyond that? And it really felt like there, you know, something needed to happen. So we emailed our fan list and, you know, asked them to share it, and that got more momentum and a bump, but we never really got to that point where it just like exploded. Anyway, it started with just this one data point. It wasn't like, we got to try this thing and go record a video and get this posted, and just reacting to the data and posting a video, it taking off, trying to throw some fuel on it, and, you know, posting links to where people could buy music, and it actually drove, you know, probably when all is said and done, probably about $500 worth of, you know, album sales. And it got thousands and thousands of streams. So I won't be able to add that up until later. But
well, another lesson here, though, even though your success was kind of accidental in this case, it required you to have a certain amount of preparation. So, you know, you're always saying videotape everything. So when you were playing these shows, you know, you had good footage with good sound just sitting there. And when you realized the song was taking off on Pandora, you're like, oh, I have that footage. Well, I should do something with it now. But, you know, that in itself did require a certain amount of preparation, even though it was unintentional in a way.
Yeah. And that's why I think it's important to, like you mentioned, videotape everything, not necessarily because you're like, I know exactly what I'm going to use this for right this second. I have these big grand schemes and plans, which you might, which are great. But I think it's just a matter of, you know, being able to take, you know, capitalize on opportunities or find areas of pockets where there might be some success that you didn't expect.
Well, I had a question about when you realized it was taking off and you wanted to, you know, throw more fuel on the fire, you did some paid advertising, right?
I did.
I forget. Did you mention that already?
I did not. And I ended up getting some Facebook ads. I put $20 towards it, and $20 doesn't seem like much, which it's not, but, I wanted to test to see if that would actually do anything and get it in front of people. Like I said, trying to figure out how to break the dam and get it sharing way beyond where it had gone so far. And the ads were disappointing. It took way too long. I only spent $20, but it took about 4 days for it to run through all the money. Which for $20, I thought it would go through it in like an hour. So it took way too long that it only got about a reach of 10,000 people. And by the time the ad was done, we had an organic reach of like 120,000 people. So clearly the organic reach was what was driving this. The advertising didn't really do anything. And in order for them to count, somebody has seen your video on the ads, they only have to have watched 3 seconds of it. So it could be someone sees it and then they just swipe on or you know, scroll down one of the whatever. So I didn't really find much value in it. Had that $20 burned through quicker and I saw that, you know, it added some momentum, I would have probably dumped in a larger chunk of money just to see what we could do. So that was some of the things we tried. So like the three things that I really tried to, you know, add to the velocity of the sharing was, one, getting our personal networks to share it, you know, just to add a little momentum to what was already happening. And then two, emailing our list about the video and asking them to share it. And then three was buying ads, and the ads didn't really seem to be worth it. So may or may not be depending on the kind of video you have, but in our case, I don't think it really did anything. I also had a couple of oh crap moments. I don't upload a lot of video to Facebook, and I learned rather quickly that when you do, the post description that you make when you upload the video originally is pretty irrelevant in the fact that they hide it pretty much when the video's shown. It's weird because they have an interface for like a title of the video and a description of the video, but then you also have to do a post description. So originally when I posted it, the reason I didn't put links to where people could buy is I didn't want to potentially hinder the shareability because it looked like it was just an advertisement for our music, like, hey, go buy our music, you know, kind of thing. The stuff we talk about all the time. I just wanted to look like, hey, here's a video. So I did that intentionally, but the oh crap moment was we had people commenting really fast and they were asking where they could buy it. It was cool because a lot of our old fans that didn't know we were still making music were like, oh, I didn't know these guys were still making records. And so I think that's where some of the sales came from. So I started posting like the links to buy in the comments, and then I updated the post. And then another oh crap moment was one of our guys has a standing radio interview with a station up in Pennsylvania every Christmas because he's just been, the DJ's just been a big fan of the band for years and years. And it was unrelated to this, but, you know, they talked about it on the air and the DJ kept saying, all right, go to the band's website, smalltownpoets.tv. And so we're like, oh, crap, that video's not on our website. It's on Facebook. And so I went and posted it on our website, and it's easy to embed and all that. So
did you embed it as a Facebook video, or did you, well, obviously, because you didn't put it on YouTube yet, right?
Yeah. We just embedded it as a Facebook video. And, you know, Facebook's come a long way with their videos. I mean, they really are trying to make a platform that competes with YouTube. And, you know, there's some compelling reasons to use Facebook over YouTube, like I mentioned. But the bummer is they still don't monetize the activity. And so it really is a matter of thinking about what value you're wanting, what's more valuable to you, the monetized activity or the shareability of the content. And so in this case, it was definitely the shareability. If we'd parked this on YouTube, we wouldn't have seen anything like we did from it, you know.
Yeah, and when you were talking about adding the links, I don't really, you know, pretend to be any expert on Facebook's algorithm. I was wondering if the fact that you didn't put sales and streaming links in there initially helped it, because to Facebook it was just pure video content that was native to Facebook. But then do you think when you added them afterwards and edited the description that slowed things down at all?
Not that I could tell. It seemed like it got a second wave of sharing. So it was like for 3 solid days, it had some good momentum, and then it started dying off.
Oh, and I added... You added the links pretty
I added them like the middle of... Like I posted it around 4:30 on Monday, the Monday before Christmas, and I added the links like Tuesday morning.
Oh, okay.
And then we kept seeing through Wednesday, we kept having momentum, like, you know, jump in shares through like Wednesday, and then it started to slow down. We ended up with like 806 shares and 55,000 views. So it really had some of this momentum. Then it hit that point and it just kind of stopped. It was pretty interesting to watch. I'm like, what just changed? Did we reach the end? was that it? And I know part of it was it's a traditional song that doesn't necessarily tie solely to Christmas, but it does mention Christmas in it. And so I know that leading up to Christmas, it was a tight window, and I knew that it was going to die by Christmas morning if it hadn't already. So I'm sure that was part of it.
I have a question though, before we dissect why the momentum died, besides it being just an incredible performance, of course, why do you think it was a success? Like what caused that frenzy of activity?
Well, I think what...
I wasn't being sarcastic. I think it actually was a great performance.
Oh, thank you.
Just so you know.
Someone asked me...
But there are a lot of great performances that...
Speaking of that, in the video, I look like I'm standing further away from the other guys. I was singing. I don't normally sing with the band. I'm not a strong singer, but I do sing on that song. But I was so sick that day. I had lost my voice when we got up that morning. Like I couldn't even, or it was the day before, I lost my voice. Like I couldn't even talk. All I could do was like make breathy noises, which was so, very disturbing.
So really you're not.
My voice finally came back the night before, but that morning I'd had a sore throat all night. I barely slept. And so, yeah, I was, I was having a hard time. I struggled through. But yeah, I think the performance was a good one. And so a couple things that I thought that made it work and make people want to share it and share, you know, share it quickly. And it wasn't, you know, it had a lot of momentum before we started asking people to share it. I think one, a cappella music is big, and this was an a cappella song. Not only is it an a cappella song, it's a true a cappella song. It's not an a cappella song that's been auto-tuned to death.
Ugh, that is the worst trend ever.
Yes.
Yes.
It's like if I wanted to hear robots, yeah, whatever. Whole other topic.
It had it was very nice quality video, and the sound was really good. And it had, I think it had a human feeling element to it. Like I said, no auto-tune and all that. It felt like, hey, there's people really singing. As far as the video is concerned, there was no fluff on it. There's like a split second before we start singing. There's no titles or anything like that. There's no end title, like go buy the music or anything. It's just a really tight cut video with no extra stuff on it. And it had a nice energy to it. And I kind of listed this out separate from the human element because when it scrolled down in Facebook, there was kind of this nice energy the way we were standing there singing. We weren't like standing there like a choir, you know, so you could tell we're singing and there's some nice, it just had this nice energy that when you see like you're scrolling through Facebook, there's all these like random cat videos or crazy, you know, just stuff flashing. This felt very human and there was movement that caught your eye, but it looked and felt different. It felt, it just had a nice energy. I noticed that after I got it on Facebook. So those are some of the things that I think worked that made people want to share it, because clearly it was a lot of people sharing it that had never heard of our band before. And it was a fun thing to just see, you know, a data point and post a video, and then suddenly all this stuff happens. And the reason why I really liked it and wanted to talk about it on the podcast is because I think it's one of those things that anybody can do. We have no momentum from touring. You know, we don't do any touring all year round. Sure, we have some old fans from our big hit records, but a lot of them didn't even know we were still making music. So it's really, our audience really feels more like an audience that we've built as independent artists. And sure, there's some fans that have been there around the whole time, but for the most part, it's not like we have this huge momentum of stuff happening that generated this. It was purely noticing something and trying something based on that data. And it's something anyone can do. People that can't tour, people that have music streaming on maybe a playlist that's doing really well for them, kind of looking at it and going, oh, I didn't know that was there. I'm paying attention to the data now and knowing where things are coming from and trying to react to them. So that's what I thought was so cool about it. It's like anyone could have done this. It was something simple. It wasn't a huge strategy. It was just paying attention. And then there was a few things that I thought, why didn't the dam break and it go bigger than it did? One, it's a Christmas song. We had 1 week, literally 1 week, and then it's over.
But the good news is that as you saw with your Pandora activity every year, it comes back. And then I think even with your Spotify, old Christmas releases each year have been getting more and more streams, right?
Yep.
So maybe this video has a second life.
We'll see. We'll see what Facebook does, how they treat video, if a video that got shared a lot, if they start recommending it again next year. We'll see. Another reason why the dam didn't break, and I'm not kidding when I say this, it had no cats or silly animals in it. I mean, it's funny. The Oregon Zoo posted a video on Tuesday of the zoo was closed, but the animals were just, they called it snow day. And the polar bears were just freaking out with the snow, just diving into it, rolling around in it. The elephants were just doing the same thing. And it's one of those videos that went just massively huge. And it even got featured on NBC Nightly News. And it's because it had cute animals in it. People love cute animals. In a world that sometimes feels dark and depressing, watching a polar bear just freak out with joy because of snow makes you happy. And you want to share it.
And then just remember, soon there will be no more polar bears.
I'm going to have to pull my album release because of that. Then another reason why I thought it didn't go bigger was nothing unexpected happens. It's not one of these things where you could say, oh, just wait till the end and it'll be worth it. You know, you see all those right. video posts where they say that.
You'll never believe how well these guys sing.
You'll never believe what happens when the song ends. yeah, nothing like that happened. So there was not the surprise or unexpected thing that you couldn't capitalize on that. And another reason why I don't think it went bigger is our initial network is so small. You know, it started with 5,200 people. We gained about 500 followers through it. But still, if we had had a network of 10,000 people or 15,000 people or 20, you're starting with a larger network that just by nature, if you've got something that's getting shared a lot, will probably reach more people. And then my last thing was not everything can be a million views. You know, some things just aren't going to be a million views.
there isn't that much viewing time to go around.
That's right. But it was cool to see that something that simple just instantly drove people buying the song. That was what was cool, buying and streaming the song instantly because of that. And with CD Baby trending reports, I could see that and tie it back to that success. It was a little harder to track on Spotify. It did see a bump, not as much as Apple Music. It did see a bump, but we have something that we'll be talking about in our playlist episode. We had something happening over there that was bigger on the playlist side that kind of overshadowed it and made it harder to tell exactly where the traction was coming from for that song. One thing I did learn, and I think we've mentioned before, but I saw it play out in real time, is that when you go to iTunes and you link to an album, they instantly turn it into an Apple Music link, which I found very frustrating because I thought this particular song people would go and buy, which they did, but you could also stream it right from, it drops in a little widget player and you can stream it right from the comments section in Facebook, which apparently a lot of people did, and a lot of people did click through and buy it, but I just thought it was a little irritating that Apple automatically changes an iTunes link to an Apple Music link. So the person really has to do another step in order to buy it.
Did you link to CD Baby at all?
Yeah, I linked people there to buy the CD and downloads. Yes, I did, I think.
I'm relieved.
Good.
Because, I mean, at least that's a certain place where the download...
There's a couple-day delay on our trending reports, and we instantly saw a sale come through CD Baby, so I knew people were clicking on the link and going places to buy. So when the trending reports kicked in, I knew that there would be some good activity, and that's because I saw some at CD Baby already. So, yes. So, anyway, that was kind of my fun Christmas vacation, and I'm gonna post some screenshots and some of this step by step on the DIY Musician blog. Probably call it "How I Use Pandora Amp and CD Baby Trending to Score 55,000 Views of Our Video." And really, just encourage artists: if you're not looking at the data, be looking at the data. That's all I have to say about that. It was a lot of fun the whole time it was happening. I'm like, I can't wait to tell the podcast audience about it, and just that this is something that anybody could have done. It wasn't hard at all, and it sold music. And maybe if I just did that all day, we would make enough music money to support ourselves.
Yeah. Well, I think I was excited to watch it.
Tell your mom thanks for your mother-in-law. You said your mom or your mother-in-law?
My mother-in-law, yeah.
Tell her thank you for sharing it.
All right. I will.
All right. Well, we've got a listener question by email, and we've got a call. So let's get to that. Let's start with the phone call. Let's do it.
Hey guys, it's John from Harbor Drive Hookup calling back again from St. Cloud, Minnesota. Just wanted to say thanks for playing my call. It was cool to finally see myself on the podcast after listening to 177 of them. It was kind of cool to hear me on there. Anyway, I just wanted to reply back. You guys talked about, Chris mentioned that listening room experience, and when you do those type of shows where you're not necessarily, it's not a music venue, you know, I was talking about breweries, and I think, too, we've been able to connect with people because they're not really maybe expecting music that night, or they are and they're looking forward to us. But when you can kind of steal the show and create that listening room experience, I feel like it really just connects with people. Like, we've done really well. Like, the last couple nights, we did a couple shows, one down in Burnsville, closer to the cities, and another one kind of up in Wilmore in a more rural area. And we were able to pull in $120 in tips between those two shows, plus we took home a decent guarantee. And that was just literally having a bucket up there, and people just wanted to put money in. And we're going to have our full album out soon, so we'll have merch to sell. But right now we don't have merch, so that was just tips, literally. But and that's another thing, too. I wanted to say thank you guys for the Kickstarter episode. I think you did a couple. It's hard to remember all of them. But we actually fully funded our first full-length album on Kickstarter. It's called Engaged by the Harbor. We raised $3,300, and so that's going to be a huge boon to us. This is what we do full-time, and so in a couple months, we'll have 1,000 CDs in hand with no overhead, literally no cost to recoup. Recording, reproductions all paid for. We already sent out T-shirts and stuff to some of the people, and so that's another thing, too, that you guys really helped us with, and I would have never, I guess, like, had the balls to do that. That was about the most scariest, most stressful thing ever. I know you talked about doing one recently, both you guys, in just, like, the last week and so, but it was worth it. So also reading Ari's book right now. It's so good, so awesome. Negotiating, too, talking about the normal rate. He talks about that in there. And like kind of what Chris said is you call in and say, you know, this is my normal rate. Does that work with your budget? And it's kind of funny because that's our normal rate, too, what Chris has mentioned for his buddy, that $150 an hour. So anyway, I could chat all day about this stuff. Thank you guys so much. I love listening to your podcast. We're actually, my wife and I are planning to come out to the Nashville for the DIY Musicians Conference. Really excited about that, and I'm actually going to try to book some shows on my way out there too. And we're all about that road trip life. We're looking at buying a tiny bus right now, or a short bus, and just hitting the road and living out there. So thanks again, guys. Have a great day.
Well, thanks, John, for the follow-up. That was cool to hear a little bit more about. He was the one that called and was talking about playing breweries and other venues.
Right,
and he
right.
seemed to be doing really well. So I asked on the podcast what kind of, you know, traction they were seeing. And so that's why he called back.
That's awesome. How much did he say they raised in their Kickstarter?
It was over $3,000. I thought he said $3,300.
Nice.
Yeah. It is stressful.
Well, I look forward to meeting you in Nashville.
Yeah, it's going to be a great event in Nashville, and it'd be nice to meet, and we can chat more. But $120 between two nights at some breweries that you're getting a guarantee at, that sounds like a pretty good deal.
Yeah, totally. I mean, if that's on top of, yeah, I'm getting $150 an hour, then I'm curious how many people are in the band, but I guess we could figure that out if we Googled it.
Yeah, that always makes a big difference. If you've got like a small two-piece or three-piece band or music duo, and you can go do those kind of things, and you do it well, and you turn it into an experience, you can start building a groundswell of an audience. And you know, a lot of people ask us about how to start out building an audience, and how do I get a gig at that club. These kind of venues are great. They allow you the chance to connect with people, to hone your craft some, and you know, sort of build the case for moving into pitching yourself to some of the bigger clubs that aren't going to pay you $150 an hour, most likely, but will allow you to start getting on bills with maybe some bigger bands and such. So I think that's an interesting approach. In fact, I just saw an article today about how they were saying that exercise clubs are becoming the club of Friday nights. And it showed, the picture showed a DJ playing. Like
at a Planet Fitness or a YMCA?
Yes, yes. Wow. And it had all these fancy lights, and everyone's on the bikes, and this guy's spinning, you know, tracks. He's the DJ. He's got his whole setup. And it was just funny that, you know, there's people congregating in places where music might work, and you might think about that. So I guess the whole premise of the article is that for some reason, the fitness industry has noticed this crush of people coming on Fridays to work out Friday night instead of going out. And one person was quoted as saying they call it their church because they go and pay for the sins of the weekend. So they go work out a ton before they go.
So they can go get wasted.
Eat garbage,
right?
And drink a lot of beer. But that might be another option. Go, you know, if you've got a couple of big gyms near your house or in your town, you might call them and say, hey, can we come set up Friday night? But you might want to go scope that place out first, because depending on your neighborhood, the gym might be a ghost town on Friday nights. It might not be worth it. Huh. All right. We've got an email, and here it is. So this email is from Cassidy, and it was kind of long. So I'm going to summarize the first part. Basically, she was in the process of making an album and had a major life event happen in her life. And she had recorded the album and had finished it, but hadn't mastered it and didn't have a graphic artist really do the album cover like she wanted. And her question is this. This brings me to my question. Now that life is a little bit more stable, I've been considering paying to have the album mastered, either professionally or maybe with Lander, since I've heard how awesome it is, and releasing it online as a newly remastered version with updated album art. I realize this doesn't undo the fact that it wasn't right the first time, and I don't expect to make a huge monetary difference. However, I would feel better knowing that when fans check out my website, Spotify profile, Apple Music page, whatever, they're seeing something high quality that represents who I am as an artist a little better. Does this seem like a total waste of time to you guys? Is it worth the money and effort that a redesign would require? As of right now, it's the only album I have available online. I'll be releasing several singles over the next 6 months and my second full album towards the end of 2017. So it won't be a standalone product for too much longer, but I also think a few of the tracks might be worth pitching for sync licensing, which I know would absolutely require having them mastered. Then she goes on just to thank us for the podcast. So what's your response?
Okay, so just so I have the facts straight, she actually did release the album before this life event happened, or during it, and it kind of came out unmastered and with album art that's not quite that great. Is that?
Yeah. So basically, she had made the album and was in the process of finishing up, like getting it mastered and the artwork done. Had this, major life event, and then wasn't in the right frame of mind and just kind of put the album out.
Just put it out. I got you.
So now that her life is feeling more back, stable, as she put it, she was thinking, is it worth the time to do it right, release it right? What's your take? I emailed her back. So you tell me your take, and then I'll see.
You already have your answer.
I already have my answer.
Okay, I would say if it's her only product, and if it hasn't already, garnered a bunch of reviews and a bunch of streams, and it's not like a great success, I would say go for it. Just master it and change the, if you're just worried about digital, you don't have to do a whole giant CD design, package design. It's just an album cover that you need. I mean, not just an album cover. It should be a good one, but you don't need to do a booklet and back cover and all that stuff. So I would say, yeah, go for it. What was your answer?
That's what I said. I told her that this is one of the cases where I think it is worth spending the time to re-release the album. I know I've said on the podcast many times, and I talk to artists a lot that will be like, hey, we did our first album and, we really didn't like it. And so we're going to go back and re-record some of the songs. And they never get past that first record. They just kind of creatively
rehash it forever, right?
And keep rehashing instead of stopping and moving on. But this isn't what's going on here. To me, it was, hey, I'm going to finish what I started. And I think honestly, it's probably would help in the healing process to finish this and
do it right.
I think in this case, it's worthwhile. I looked at her music online and it looked like she did have some fans and some following. And so I think it would be wise to do it. Now, here's what I would recommend. And I don't think I said this in the email, Cassidy, if you're listening, do not take the old album down. Leave that one live. And the reason why I say that is because people might have already put some of your songs in playlists and things that you don't even know about. And I would just leave that there so you're not deleting any success that you might have already had, but you're enhancing it. And I also told her in the email that I would re-release it and use her story as explaining the why to her fans. Like, why is this showing up again? Why are there two versions of this? And using that story as a way to draw people in and build a stronger connection with her and her music, as opposed to it just randomly showing up one day. And then fans being like, what are you doing? I already got this album. What's different about, So
right.
That's what I thought, where it makes total sense to do. And then, you've already got a plan for the rest of the year. You got some singles coming out. You got a new album in the works. So I think it makes sense.
Well, and I just had one thought. Chances are mastering it, having it professionally mastered is a good idea. But it might be worth... what am I trying to... So, it's tough to tell what kind of job the mixing engineer did. Maybe the mixes are loud enough and they sound great. You never know, what percentage increase in quality you're going to get from mastering. So if it's the case that your audio sounds good as is, maybe you could just fix the album cover, in which case you don't need to re-release anything. But that's kind of a long shot, because pretty much most albums need to be mastered to boost the volume and to, you know.
Yeah, I'd recommend mastering it. And even using Lander is great. So, I mean, even if it's like you don't have the money, I would use Lander and master it. It really helps get the volumes where they need to be, especially if you have got some songs that she mentioned, sync licensing. That'll be really key, because a track that isn't mastered can sometimes sound very weak and not fit, you know, sit in a, if it's going in a movie or TV show, not sit in there really well. So it's not to say that there's not tracks that haven't been mastered that have made it in TV shows. I'm sure there are plenty, but you want to remove every barrier to entry to those kind of things. So if you want to email us or call us, you can do so. We would love for you to call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And yeah, or you can leave comments in the show notes at cdbabypodcast.com. Chris, somebody sent us a video. I've yet to look at it. I have yet to click on the link. They sent us a video of why they should be on the podcast.
Are you sure you want to click that link?
I'm going to eventually. We'll see. But yeah, lots of exciting things happening. I'm really excited about this new year, optimistic about what's going on in the industry, and just think it's a great time to be an independent artist. So we've got some good episodes in the works, some playlisting. I've got an interview coming up about copyright and some of those nitty-gritty details. And we were talking about doing a podcast about touring. We haven't talked about touring much as of late, but we've got a few options that we're working on with that. So I've got some good topics ready to roll, and I'm excited. It's going to be a good year.
Yep. Patriots will win the Super Bowl. Everything will be great.
Chris, come on. We got to end on a high note. I would say it'd be the Seahawks, but I don't know that they're going to survive. They looked streaky all year, but haven't your Patriots had enough?
No, no. When you're on top, you got to stay there.
That totally sounds against everything I see you post on Facebook.
I make small exceptions in my ideology for sports. All right. And actually, I don't even care about the Red Sox and the Bruins. It's just the Patriots.
Oh, I didn't know this. Interesting.
Yeah. Celtics, I don't care. I mean, I like the Red Sox, okay, but it's really all about football.
Yeah.
Total domination.
It's one of those things, I have to hand it to Tom Brady. I know a lot of people have strong dislike for him, but man, he's got something special if he can do that year after year.
Right? So. I mean, I just want to see him go until he's like, what did he say he wants to do, until he's 45? That's how long they need to win for.
I'm 42, and I cannot imagine 300-pound linemen running after me at full speed, landing on top of me. I just couldn't handle it anymore. Somehow we turn this into a football podcast, which is very rare, because most musicians I know don't even like football. Is that the one with the ball you bounce, or is that the one with the... Anyway. All right, well...
My last sports comment is that although everyone that works at CD Baby pretty much is an artist, and specifically a musician, there's a huge amount of sports fans that work at CD Baby.
But they like things like soccer and stuff. There's a couple guys that really like college football that we've added to the ranks. There's soccer and the Blazers, things that you find in Portland.
Hockey, yeah.
Yeah. Football, we don't have an NFL team here. We just have the Seahawks, so it's kind of the Northwest team. All right, at this point, it's just you and I now, Chris.
Yep,
so if there's anything else you want to talk about... All right, well, I look forward to the new year and good things to come. So with that, Chris, why don't we close out our football podcast?
All right.
All right, we'll catch you
all next time. We'll talk about baseball.
All right, see ya. Bye. You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.